This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Thanks for coming tonight, everybody. So I'm going to spend hopefully the next hour and a half talk a little bit about management of articular collagen lesions. So I don't know any of you guys in the audience so far, so hopefully at the end of this talk, I could get to know some of you guys. My name is Benjamin Ma. I do orthopedic surgery here at UCSF, and I'm chief of shoulder and sports medicine service here at UCSF. My practice is mostly down in Mission Bay, in case you guys haven't been down to that campus. This is our new UCSF campus, and we actually see patients down there. We do surgeries down there. I apologize, that's why I'm kind of running a little late, because I need to go across town in the middle of a rush hour evening to get over here. So we're going to talk a little bit about management of articular collagen lesions. The way I structure the talk is that, in about halfway in the talk, I have a little pause and answer some questions. And then we're going to answer some questions at the end also. So, feel free to kind of, ask me questions, during the break and also at the end. Okay, so we'll keep it quite informal. If you guys have any questions, feel free to ask me over here. I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of the conventional methods of treating, cartilage injury and also some of the kind of new things that may be coming up over here. So just kind of show of hands. Why are you guys here tonight? What do you guys want to learn about? Questions over here? Yeah, anybody that,
It's just fun.
Fun, yeah.
It's just fun. You guys are able to talk about a lot of things that are very interesting, and that you keep it so that we can understand it, and it's fun.
Good. Well, hopefully it's a fun evening at the end of this. So anybody else want any questions, or things that you want to learn from this talk at all? Pretty quiet. You guys haven't warmed up yet, so maybe after dinner over here. So let's see. Okay. All right. So some of the disclosures, so I do work in research. As I have a research lab down in Mission Bay that does a lot of imaging research for me. I also have some research with companies that we're actually doing some type of shoulder replacement. Another disclosure is that I am an orthopedic surgeon. I enjoy operating, okay, and I like to see patients do well after surgery. So a lot of things what I talk about maybe related to what I like to do. So a lot of things may be like surgical treatments out there. So it may or may not be the best treatment, to tell people. So, why do we fix articular collagen injuries over here? So let's see over here. I apologize. This is not running this video. I'm just skip through this over here. This is actually showing a ski jumper that actually fell off the slope and injured her knee that saw me a few years back. We have to kind of, do surgery on her to kind of get her back into activities. How come my knee hurts? There are multiple, people complains. Most common is like knee trouble over there that some of you may have in the audience. Some of them may be related to bad injuries, like, this gentleman over here in this year's NFC championship game over here. Or someone just kind of fell and hit the knee on the curb over there. Pretty common, day-to-day injuries that could, give people trouble. There are different causes of joint pain, right? And most of you guys in the audience have joint problems, right? I certainly is one of them. Okay, everybody, almost ubiquitous, as we get, grow older or as we become more active, our joints will start to hurt. So what are the different causes of joint pain? So I think grossly kind of divide it into maybe trauma. You could be fractured. As a gentleman that actually, took care of doing surgery today and fell off the mountain bike and broke the shoulder, requires to have surgery done. Could be a ligament tear. How many, of you guys have gone to the slope this year? One, two, only a few. Not a good year for skiing at all. But skiing is actually a very common sport that people get ligament injuries. So ACL are very common for us, especially here in Northern California in the wintertime when people go skiing and hurt themselves. How many runners in the audience? A few. Overuse injuries. Must have some joint problems and knee problems, over the years, or like Achilles tendon, tendonitis over there. So overuse can be a cause of joint problem. Infection. Some people could be like immunocompromised, or some people may have a cut, in the joints that lead to infection. And usually these are, a big problem, so we actually need to take care of them quickly. And even when you take care of the problem, doesn't mean the problem is gone. Let's say if you have an infection in the joint, you could rush to the surgery, do surgery, take the infection away, but damage is done. It means that the infection caused permanent damage to the cartilage, and those cartilage will tend to deteriorate in a very quick way compared with normal joint deterioration. Could be muscle imbalance, you know, or weakness. You know, someone actually, you know, a little bit weaker. You know, for example, they may have some condition like a rotator cuff tear, or maybe like a muscle weakness, you know, from a stroke. They can have joint pain because, you know, their joint doesn't move, you know, the right way. In college wear, you know, injuries are pretty normal. Just like the treads in the tires that you guys, you know, may have drove here today or sitting in a car to get here, the tires get worn out. The more you drive, the more the tires going to wear out. Same with the cartilage. No difference. It's basic physics over here. You know, the more you use the joint's going to get worn out. Some people are more prone to get arthritis, means that genetically the cartilage don't, you know, repair as quickly. Or some people are more, you know, are likely to get arthritis because of injuries. You know, if I drive over a ditch tonight and puncture the tire's going to wear out a lot quicker than if I actually be careful about, you know, driving. So injuries could certainly make your joint deteriorate a lot quicker. Okay. So in terms of treatment of articular cartilage injuries, you know, there are a lot of things that we actually, you know, want to, you know, factor in. You know, how much symptoms they have, when do they, you know, bottom, which joint is giving them trouble. Some of them may be one joint, some may be like multiple joints, you know, over there. Age and activity is also an important factor in terms of, you know, how we kind of advise, you know, a person over there. If I have someone that is a 16-year-old that have, you know, joint pain because they actually played too much basketball, and don't want to rest and play year-round over there. Very different from someone that's actually 50-year-old that actually, you know, play basketball over the weekend, you know, per se. So I think in terms of, the, you know, activity-wise and also the age is important. And also need, you know, someone maybe actually, you know, need to be active because they have a scholarship, you know, that's, you know, waiting for them to fulfill. Some of them actually have a job. They need them to be active. You know, I'm a construction worker. I need to have my shoulders and my knees in order for me to work. Or some people say, hey, you know, I need my hands, you know, kind of, you know, do some of the, fine motor work. And those are very important things. So different people have different needs in terms of, you know, the activity. So, you know, these are, you know, different people have different obvious, you know, needs of their joints per se. Okay. So articular cartilage injury, there are multiple injuries. This is kind of broad, you know, a topic about, you know, cartilage injury. Cartilage injury in a layman's term is mostly, you know, known as arthritis. You know, when you have arthritis, it means that your cartilage gets worn out. Cartilage actually the soft covering over the bone. Okay. So when you eat your chicken wings, you know, tonight, and you know, when you break out the chicken wings at the end of the chicken, you know, bones where there's a white cartilage, that's the covering of the, you know, of the bone. When the cartilage gets worn out, layman's term, that's when you get osteoarthritis, you know, arthritic changes over there. So cartilage degeneration is more of a medical term saying that you have arthritis, you know, in the joint. Now, it's a spectrum, right? Some people have arthritis because they just start to have some early wear and tear, or some people may have bone-on-bone arthritis, okay? So there's, a different arthroscopic pictures. A patient in mind, they have different levels of cartilage injury. This gentleman actually had an ACL tear. When they tear the ligament, you know, in the knee actually, you know, shifted, and part of the knee hit the other parts, you know, in the tibia, and there's a little crack in the cartilage. Rest of the knee looks really good. Okay, so that's cartilage injury. Okay, there's a patient over here actually, you know, dislocated a kneecap, and actually knock off a piece of cartilage, and actually this is the area that actually, you know, the body forms with some scar tissue over the area. So that's also articular cartilage injury. Okay. Well, there's a person over here that is about, you know, 60 years old, actually had a previous fracture in the leg and was fixed. And now this is exposed bone. So this is bone-on-bone arthritis. So these are all different articular cartilage injury. And we're going to try to kind of sort these out a little bit and talk a little bit about different things we could do for these, you know, injuries over there. Now, how do you diagnose cartilage, you know, injury? So I'm going to probably see most of you guys starting touching your joints in the next half an hour over here. You guys see, like, you know, do you have articular cartilage injuries over there? Well, first thing people, you know, come into the office and tell you, hey, it hurts, okay? You know, Ben, it hurts when I do this. It hurts when I get up, you know, from a chair. It hurts when I actually, you know, finish running. It hurts, you know, when it's the end of the day, when I stand the whole day over there. So those are the things, you know, that people complain about. But when you really look at, you know, how do you make the diagnosis, a lot of it's based on physical examination, okay? So where does it hurt? Okay, does it hurt in the muscle? Does it hurt the joint? which part of the joint it bothers you. So there's a particular patient, actually, you know, when you look at a knee joint over here, this is the joint line where actually the cartilage get worn out, they hurt along the joint. They will come in and say, hey, it hurts on the inside part of the leg, you know, or hurt on the outside part of the leg. Or some people, when they actually, you know, they are bikers, they say, hey, it hurts in the front part of the leg. So, you know, just location will tell you where the injury is, okay? Same with the shoulder joint over here. They say, hey, it hurts in the back part of the shoulder when I lift things over there. Or, you know, for hip arthritis, usually people complain of groin pain. So just kind of, you know, finding the location of where the, you know, pain occurs to kind of guide you in terms of the, you know, pathology over there. Most of us have had x-rays before, so x-rays are great. X-rays are basically, you know, a diagnostic tool that allows to look at the bone structures. Does x-ray look at cartilage? No. Okay, x-ray look at bones. So how could x-ray look at, you know, how could x-ray make diagnosis of arthritis? Because when you have arthritic changes, when the cartilage gets worn out, the bone actually have a reaction to it. So one of the obvious, you know, things that we see is when you wear out the cartilage, the space that's between the bone that should be, you know, filled with cartilage get worn out. So that's what we call, you know, joint space narrowing. So when the joint gets worn out over there, the space get narrower. Okay. So you may have seen some people that may have like what we call bone on bone arthritis, you know, seen on x-ray, means the bone's touching the bone, there's no space in between, you know, the two bones over there. That's, you know, arthritis over there. But x-ray, you know, remember, is it doesn't look at cartilage. It's a secondary, you know, way. It's actually, you know, an end result of when you have cartilage injury, what the bone does. You could look at bone spurs also. So, for example, you know, the shoulder joint, when they get worn out, they have spurs in the back part of the shoulder. Those are all signs they actually look for, you know, arthritis over there. How many of you guys have had MRIs done on you? A few. Pretty loud, right? Pretty narrow tube that you go into. Okay, it takes about half an hour, 45 minutes, you know, or so. Okay, so MRI started about almost in the 1960s, you know, and 70s, it would become like more of a clinical use. MRIs are great. MRIs can actually allow to look at soft tissue very well. And what it does is actually look at actual cartilage thickness. See how, you know, thick or thin the cartilage is. Okay. It still doesn't tell you how good the quality of the cartilage is, you know, yet. You know, I think the newer MRIs actually allow to do this. But the conventional or the traditional MRI that's available for us for clinical use right now could tell you, hey, it's there, it's not there. Is torn, is not torn, but doesn't tell you how good or bad the cartilage, you know, itch is in them. It also tell you a lot about the soft tissue. For example, your rotator cuff tendons, your ligaments, those are all, you know, things you can see. So that's a particular patient with, you know, bone-on-bone arthritis in the inside part of the leg over there. So again, you know, the space is, you know, where the cartilage should be. This is a, you know, normal-looking joint. You know, the joint's nice and smooth, you know, over there. This is a bone-on-bone arthritis, you know, in the knee joint over there. On top of it, when I really look closely, you see the little cysts in the bone also? So those are all secondary changes that the x-ray could tell you what's going on. But does it tell you, you know, where the cartilage and what the quality of cartilage is on this side of the knee? It doesn't, okay, because, you know, those are indirect ways of looking at it, okay? MRIs are great, as we mentioned about. So this is a patient, actually, you know, the young patient actually mentioned earlier, tear the ligaments over there, but when when they tear the ligament, you can make the diagnosis just examining them. Hey, the knee is loose. You already know the ligament's torn, but what we don't know until we get the MRI is that, you know, the patient also lost some cartilage in the knee. So, you know, when you look at the knee, this is actually a side view, looking at the side, view of the knee. This is your thigh bone. That's your shin bone. Kneecap is in the front part of the leg over here. Menisci are right over here. The black structures of the meniscus. So this is the thigh bone. You know, this is the black bone, you know, black lining where the edge of the bone, the cortical bone is, okay? And the covering is a gray cartilage. See the gray cartilage on the tibia, which is the shin bone right there, is nice and smooth. The femur over here, it comes around almost like someone took a little chunk off over there, and then the cartilage come back again. So this is what we call a focal cartilage injury. This person does not have generalized osteoarthritis, doesn't have bone-on-bone arthritis on the x-ray, but on MRI, you can pick up these small lesions. This lesion is about a centimeter, you know, in diameter, and these could be treated with particular techniques that allow us to kind of resurface the cartilage over there. Okay. So ultimately, why do we do all these tests, you know, so that, you know, people like him could kind of take care of us, you know, over there. This obviously is a person that's, not the best habit, you know, in the world over there. But, allowing us to look at the quality of the tissue would kind of lead us to treatment. If we can't see the problem, we can't treat you. Okay? If I could see that you have arthritis and I say, hey, maybe you should not run so much. Maybe you should, you know, use a cane. Maybe you should use a brace. Maybe you should need to have, you know, a knee, you know, replacement surgery. But we can't pick up the, you know, injury over there. We can't treat these people. So, you know, over the years, you know, with the, you know, invention of X-rays, MRI, and now soon to be what we call quantitative MRI, I think it does increase our ability to treat people better. So, you know, how many of you guys have arthroscopic surgery done before? A few of you guys in the audience over here. So this is what we see, you know, when we do diagnostic arthroscopy. So I'm an arthroscopic surgeon and do, you know, this is what I do, you know, in my practice over here. This is actually a knee joint. So, you know, this is the white cartilage that you see. Remember the chicken wings, right? You know, you go home, break the chicken wings, you know, end of the bone, they're the white cartilage. That's, you know, what you see. So I'm looking around the knee first. This is the outside part of the knee. See how, you know, white everything is? A normal knee should be nice and white, not much inflammation. If there's a lot of red tissue in them, there's a lot of, you know, inflamed tissue or synovitis. So there's the outside part of the knee. This is the cartilage of the knee, nice and white, you know, over there. Okay, this person does not have much wear at all. Okay, and I look across the inside part of the knee also looks really, really good. Okay, and then we actually could look at the meniscus, you know, a bit over here right now. Okay. So, you know, let's take a look right here in the middle. That's the meniscus over there. Those are the shock absorbers. See how nice and smooth the cartilage is? Okay. There's no human, you know, made surfaces that are as smooth as articular cartilage. Even ice on ice, even ceramic on ceramic is not as smooth as articular cartilage, you know, articular cartilage. This is actually a really, really amazing, you know, structure that people have. This person still happened to have an ACL that's torn. You know, there's actually a torn ACL in the middle part, you know, knee over here. And the outside part of the knee also have some, you know, a good collagen. So that's what we could see in surgery. And it actually corresponds to what the MRI shows over there. So again, this is the cartilage over there. That's a meniscus. I just want to show you guys a little bit about what, you know, we could, you know, see in surgery. So in terms of treatment of, you know, articular cartilage injury, there are different types that we could do. So again, depends on how severe the problem is. We could start off, you know, activity modification means, hey, you know, joint hurts you, well, don't do that activity, right? You know, I think that, you know, avoid those activities, strengthen your, you know, legs over there, ease back to activities. Those are, you know, things that we could do. You could also, you know, do injections to the knee. But injection does it really cure the, you know, a cartilage injury? No, it doesn't. Okay, so when you do injections, we could do what we call corticosteroids, you know, which is, you know, basically anti-inflammatory. It cuts down the inflammation. But when you have cartilage injury, the cartilage, you know, will get flare up again, and people will get, you know, symptoms again. So those usually they're short-term, you know, solution. Or you could do something called viscosupplementation, which is actually, you know, inject some lubricants, you know, in the knee. You know, again, you know, when your cartilage get worn out, when your ties are flat, doesn't matter what you put in there, right? You know, you're still going to have, you know, wear and tear. The patient's still going to have symptoms to it. So these injections are usually short-term solution. You know, they're not a cure, but it can make, you know, people, you know, are more comfortable with it. In terms of surgery, what we could do, there are different ways, you know, that we could, you know, restore the cartilage. And there are some what we call palliative type treatment, means that, hey, we could try and make the condition a little bit more tolerable. We could do reparative. It means to try to kind of get the, you know, body to kind of, you know, do some healing on itself. Or restorative means that, you know, I'm going to put some new cartilage in the area that it's, you know, worn out. We do realignment, which means that, you know, realigning the leg to offload the side that's worn out. Or we could do replacement. So most of you guys probably heard replacement, you know, surgery already. It's a very effective, you know, operation. I tell people it works very well. You know, we do a lot of those, you know, surgeries, you know, right now. But you know, I think that we want to reserve it when people actually have more debilitation over there. Okay. So, you know, what are palliative treatments? So, you know, people say, hey, a lot of you guys may have heard that so-and-so said that, you know, I should have my knee cleaned out, right? How many of you guys have your knee cleaned out before, your joint cleaned out? That's a few in the audience over there. Clean out the knee, okay? Clean out the knee means that, you know, well, there's some fray cartilage, you know, floating in the knee that's a little bit worn out. Let me just go smoothen an area for you, okay? So this started, you know, we started doing this, you know, with arthroscopic surgery probably about almost 25, 30 years ago, okay? Which means you go in and just kind of take some of the fray tissue away. So this is actually a patient with an arthritic knee. You can see the nice white cartilage on the side over there and see the area. There's some exposed bone, okay? This person doesn't have bone or bone arthritis yet, but he's getting there. Okay, so there's some exposed bone over here, but the other side still have cartilage. There's still some cartilage left. So when you get an x-ray on this particular person, x-ray looks pretty good still. On the other hand, if this person get an MRI, you could pick up, you know, those lesions over there for you. So we could actually mechanically go in with a shaver. This is actually one of the, you know, a device that we have. It's almost like a vacuum cleaner with a little kind of router at the end. So literally suck up, you know, the loose cartilage and then kind of remove that, you know, from the patient's body. We could also use a curette, which is almost like a little spoon type, you know, structure, kind of really, you know, scrape some of the, you know, cartilage off. Or we could actually use something where we go thermal, you know, treatment to actually kind of seal the cartilage. You kind of burn the cartilage and get the cartilage denatured a bit. It was kind of pretty popular about 15, 20 years ago. Mostly actually started here in the Bay Area. Actually, it turns out to be not as healthy for the tissue. Okay? So that's what the, you know, traditional cleanup surgery that people talk about over there. So when you do cleanup surgery, you know, what you could do is, this is actually an arthroscopic video, you know, of us doing, you know, a cleanup surgery. This is a, you know, particular basketball player that, you know, every time he, you know, jumps, he kind of hurts in the front part of the knee, and there's some swelling in the knee also. So this is actually a, you know, a shaver that we have inside the knee. We're actually cleaning up, you know, some of the loose cartilage in the front part of, you know, of his kneecap over there. But you can see that how good the rest of the cartilage looks like, you know. This area was exposed and kind of pinkish, you know, is actually where the bone is. So now we're actually removing the loose cartilage, and hopefully you have less irritation on the knee, okay? And after we clean up that area, there's some bleeding, you know, from the body itself. You know, what it does, it forms some scar tissue over the area. And people, you know, can do, you know, quite well if they have, you know, certain symptoms. On the other hand, you know, I tell people, too, is that, you know, some of you may have actually read in the news or actually, you know, read Wall Street Journal, which is a very respected medical journal, by the way, okay, you know, and Sports Illustrated also. I think it's, people get lots of information from that over there. So there are multiple randomized control study, means that you bring the patient to the operating room, they pull out an envelope and say, okay, you're going to have surgery, go into room A, and you're going to not get surgery, go to room B. So when they go into room, they will all dress up as if they're doing surgery. And in one room, they actually do the actual operation. In the other room, they bring it in and play some music, you know, as if, you know, people, you know, doing surgery. They do make a cut in the knee over there, but they actually didn't do the operation. It's what we call sham operation. So, okay, so the patient doesn't know which treatment they have over there. And turns out, you know, if you have someone that comes in to, you know, do surgery for clean-up surgery, that we used to think is a very effective operation about 15, 20 years ago, found that a year out from the surgery, there's absolutely no difference in terms of how people do, okay? So this clean-up surgery, you know, people, you know, found that is not, you know, very, very effective. And this actually has been done multiple times right now in terms of, you know, this, you know, this operation, this study over here. But, you know, these are usually, you know, these are all studies done on people with early arthritis, early to moderate arthritis. So when your symptoms are mainly just arthritic symptoms, the clean-up surgery doesn't work. If your symptoms are, hey, I have a torn meniscus, the meniscus is actually really catching, you know, actually out of position over there, those surgery, you know, still is effective. You know, but it's, you know, in terms of the clean-up surgery, there are multiple studies that now that show that it doesn't work, you know, over there. Okay. What are other treatments that we could do? Another thing that, you know, that we could do is what we call microfracture. That's when you actually, the cartilage get worn out, you have some exposed bone, but, you know, the rest of the knee still looks really good. So analogy I have is almost you walk into a room like today, or, you know, hey, the middle of the room, there's a little patch of carpet that's worn out. The rest of the room looks pretty good, okay? So all you want to do is just try to, you know, cover that area up, you know, with it. So what could I do? Okay, so, you know, one of the things that we could do is called microfracture. So, you know, a gentleman called Dick Stedman, actually, you know, from Tahoe, actually, you know, found this way of restoring cartilage, is that, you know, hey, I could put little pocos into the bone, and let the, you know, blood from the bone marrow come out, you know, from the bone marrow and form a blood clot over this, you know, exposed area. And what the blood does is that it will actually get remodeled and form almost like a scar, you know, covering that exposed bone. So, you know, when you do this operation over here, it doesn't form normal cartilage, okay? Remember I told you earlier that cartilage is actually one of the most unique things in the world, in the universe, that's actually smoother than any man-made surfaces over there. But when you have formed fibrocartilage, which is scar that covers that area, it doesn't have the same property as articular cartilage. It's kind of like a, you know, basically like a scab, you know, over the exposed bone. Well, it helps because it covers the bones. So what's hurting, you know, people when people have arthritis? Not the cartilage, you know, because the cartilage doesn't have any nerve endings. When people feel pain, it's actually their bone. So when you have bone reaction to the cartilage, or when your bone, have the cartilage worn out, have bone on bone, that's when they have symptoms. So what this operation does is form a scab or form a scar to cover the exposed bone. It works to, help, decrease some of the symptoms, but it's not as durable as an articular cartilage. Okay. The recovery of this operation is pretty difficult in the sense that, when you have the surgery done, you have to be on crutches for about 6 weeks. The reason why is to think about what happens when you have a blood clot that's formed. When you walk on that blood clot, the clot's going to fall off pretty easily, right? So you can't put any weight on it. You have to wait that blood clot to kind of solidify. And also you need to use what we call a continuous passive motion machine. You basically get strapped into this machine 6 hours a day, and the machine moves your knee back and forth. So what happens is almost like, you pour some cement in the middle of the room. Well, the cement doesn't know what, shape to set in, right? So you have to kind of smoothen it back and forth to make sure that, blood clot form that, nice, smooth, covering over, the bone itself. So that's what the CPM machine does. So most of us in the room will probably say, wow, 6 weeks, on crutches, no way. That's pretty hard work over there, 6 hours a day for, this type of surgery. So, I think it's a very difficult recovery, I tell people, okay? But it works, I think it works, for, a certain subgroup of people over here. And I think that, people can do well from this, okay? So microfracture is actually one of our first-line treatment surgically for articular cartilage injury. It's done as an outpatient procedure. It's done using arthroscopic surgery. You don't have to make any incision at all. But the recovery is long. And recovery means that you have to be 6 weeks, no weight, and use a machine over there and ease back to activity over months or so. Okay. Now, what's another treatment that you could do? Hey, you could do some restorative treatment. It means that, hey, instead of just forming, scar tissue to cover the bone, can I actually take cartilage from someone else or grow cartilage and put it back in the knee? So I think that those are things that, has been done, and I'll share with you some of the latest treatment that, we have right now. So one of the things that we could do is what we call mosaic plasty, which is kind of taking cartilage from someone else in the knee or someone else in the body to cover the area. You could do something called allograft, which is taken from someone else. An allo, every time when you have allograft, means that you actually, from a cadaver or someone else you could take the, tissue from. Or some of the things that we could do right now is that we could actually grow cartilage, which is called autologous cartilage transplantation over there. So this is actually, some of the surgery we do in terms of mosaic plasty. We take cartilage, plugs from other parts of the knee to cover the defect over there. The reason why I call it mosaic plasty, because look at this area. It's kind of almost like a little, mosaic stone. It doesn't fill up the area completely. So you're kind of patching work over there. So it works by covering overall most of the area, but you still have these crevices in between. So it's not ideal in terms of covering, the area. But, this is kind of one of the treatments that we could do. This is a bulk allograft in which I take a cartilage, plug from someone else that we match the size and curvature, of the patient to actually take a whole plug and cover that area. But you can imagine how difficult it is to get perfect cartilage from someone else that just passed away. Most of these are actually young people, teenagers or 20 years old, to have them pass away and have the right size to allow us to kind of, cover the area. So bulk allograft can be done, but it's not very commonly done, and only done for selective lesions over there. ACI, or autologous cartilage transplantation, is another treatment that we could talk a little bit about that, okay? Now, what's so unique about cartilage? We'd spend a lot of time, spend a little bit of time about, cartilage getting worn out, over there. Well, cartilage, actually, when you look at, the slides over there, it's a very complex structure. People always think about, oh, it's smooth, it's white, it's a little shiny when you look at it over there. What is going on in there? So, the cartilage actually have different layers. The top layer, or the layer actually closest to the joint, is actually a very flat, smooth layer. And the cells, when you look at it, goes flat. The reason why is, think about what the joint surface needs to do. Joint surface needs to move back and forth. So a lot of what we call shear forces, so things that kind of move sideways over there. So that's why the cells align themselves flat. You also, when you look at, the cells down deeper over here, you see these what we call columnar cells over there. The cells start to line up a little bit more round, number one. And number two, they almost like line up, little columns over there. And that's actually very helpful because think about what cartilage needs to do. It needs to absorb the shock and the pressure. So when they align columnally, it's almost like little pillars inside the structure can absorb the shock, of the knee. So it's a very, very complicated, structure. That's why man-made tissue have yet to kind of, you know, duplicate something as complicated as this over here. Okay, so we talk a little bit about the microfracture. You form some scar tissue, you know, over that area. We also talk about mosaicoplasty, which, you know, I could kind of borrow some college, you know, to cover the, you know, the area. Well, what do you mean by that? Okay, so mosaicoplasty are commonly done in the knee because most of us, you know, tend to have knee trouble, you know, over there, and may have some, you know, knee injuries, and that tends to be a more tends to be a little bit bigger joint that allows you to do these different surgery. So essentially, you know, this is a diagram showing that, hey, person may come in and may have some lesion on this side of the leg over there that actually has some exposed bone. What I could do is I could take cartilage from elsewhere and get the area covered. So in this diagram over here, I take little plugs from, you know, along the inside part of the leg to cover the area. So when you really think about it, is that, well, it's Rob, you know, robbing Peter and paying Paul, right? You're taking, you know, cartilage from good places to cover the bad area. You're taking cartilage actually from a less important area to cover the more important area. What's a more important area? More important area there is where you're standing on. You know, so when you actually look at the knee over here, this is actually where the weight-bearing portion of the, you know, of the joint. So where you're standing is actually the more important, because every step you take, you know, it would actually lead to wear on that area. The, you know, less important part of the knee is actually right around the edge of the kneecaps. Okay, so where the kneecap sits on the edge of the bone over there, what we call the trochlea, a little bit less important. It's still important, but a little bit less important because that's the area that actually where your kneecap moves back and forth. You're not really walking, you know, directly, you know, with stress over that area. But you are kind of taking, you know, a cartilage from elsewhere to cover, you know, the lesion. So analogy, again, using this, you know, this room per se, is, hey, I have a lesion in the middle of the part of the room. Well, let me take some, you know, carpets from the corner over here, the back of the, you know, room, a corner of the room, and kind of get that area covered. But when you get it covered, they don't fit in perfectly. The pattern doesn't fit in. That's why I have that mosaic, you know, structure to it. And the limitation of mosaicoplasty is that you could only cover so big of an area, right? If the hole in the middle of the room is so big that you can't borrow elsewhere to kind of get it covered very well, then you can't do this operation. So there's a size limit on how big the lesion you could do a mosaicoplasty. And the other thing too is that, well, it depends how the rest of the room looks like, right? If the rest of the knee, the cartilage get is not very good, we don't want to get not so very good cartilage to kind of fill in the, you know, the area, because, you know, once you transplant over there, that won't work very well, you know, either. So you have to kind of look at the condition of the surrounding cartilage. If they're good, then you could do this procedure. If it's not very good, then it won't work very well. Okay. So essentially you're robbing Peter and pay Paul, you know, over there. And people, you know, may not have enough tissue to donate. So this is actually a patient of mine over here. I actually have a piece of cartilage actually coming off over here. And this is actually when we do arthroscopic surgery and take that little lesion out. It's actually about almost, you know, 2 centimeters in diameter. So when you think about 2 centimeters, not so big. It's about this big, Ben. And what's so big deal about it? Well, your knee is actually not a very big structure. The width of, you know, most of our knees are only about maybe 3 centimeters wide from each condyle, so each side of it. It's about 3 centimeters. If you lose 2 centimeters of the cartilage, it's actually about 2/3 of one of the weight being serviced. So this is actually, you know, when I open the knee up, this is the, you know, defect that's missing. So what I did, actually got little plugs from elsewhere, usually, you know, right around the kneecap area to kind of get that area covered. So this is the last plug I have to put in. I have to kind of push this, you know, plug in a bit more to make it line up over there for this patient. So when you see this, again, it's called mosaicoplasty because it's kind of a little patching up over there, but it doesn't fill up all the crevices in there. Okay. So it works, but you can't deal with big lesions. You know, I think that anything smaller than 2 centimeters, I tell people, could be done. But if you have generalized wear, it doesn't work very well. Okay. Well, how about bulk allograft? Bulk allograft, you know, as mentioned, as, you know, people pass away, it turns out their size is kind of fits that particular person, and that particular person only have very selective area that, you know, cartilage worn out. Then we can actually transplant the cartilage over there. So these are, you know, grafts usually harvested, you know, under sterile condition, means that the people pass away and, you know, they're almost as if they're doing like surgery, going sterilely, harvest, you know, the cartilage. And they do a lot of testing in terms of making sure that the patient doesn't have an infection, which means like bacteria infection, fungal infection, you know, HIV and hepatitis. So, you know, the testing actually takes literally about 21 days for the tissue, you know, to be completely cleared. And when we actually clear it, literally we have a window about 14 days to implant the cartilage, because, you know, think about what the cartilage is doing. You know, when you pass away, it doesn't have the right blood supply, so the cartilage cells will start to die off over there. So, you know, the earlier you implant the tissue, the more likely you're going to actually have some live cells that go in inside, you know, the graft. The longer you wait, you're almost as if, you know, putting like just a structure with no cells in there. So the earlier your implant is hopefully better, you know, for the patients over there. So that's why, you know, when people do need this type of surgery, they kind of almost on call. It means that, hey, I'm going to, you know, put in the request in a tissue bank, but whenever the right, you know, tissue come by, we need you to be ready very quickly because, you know, we need to have the surgery done. Very different from like a heart transplant. Heart transplant, literally you only have about like 12 hours, a little bit less than a day to get like, you know, a transplant done because the heart actually would die if they actually, you know, out of the body for too long. For kidneys, a little bit longer, you know, about a couple of days or so you can plan around a kidney transplant. For these cartilage, you know, implants, you can wait a little bit longer, but, you know, only up to about 35 to 42 days over there. But still, you know, you have a defined period. You can't just say, hey, I'm on vacation, let me come back in about a month to do it. You know, you can't do that over there. Okay. So this particular patient over here, I actually have a big lesion. This is how it looks like when we open up almost the entire condyle, you know, which is kind of like the width of the knee was involved, you know, in this particular patient. This is actually the allograft. This is actually the donor graft that comes out. So we actually put it side by side. Take a picture of that for the patient. And literally I call out the middle part, you know, that, you know, a bad collagen, take the little plug, implant of this particular patient over there. So this actually fits this patient pretty well, you know, over there. And it works, you know, well because you're basically getting like a biologic replacement. You're getting someone else's, you know, tissue that's still alive. And you put it inside, you know, someone else's, you know, a damaged knee over there. But the tough thing is that you can't get these tissue very readily because they only, you know, certain number of, you know, people that pass away that give us those tissue. And also depends on the condition of the knee. If the knee has a lot of generalized wear and tear already, you can't patch multiple areas. We only cover one or two areas only because, you know, if your knees start to have lots of areas that's going to worn out, that won't very well. Okay. Well, how about growing cells? You know, we're so good, you know, about, you know, molecular biology. UCS have a lot of great discovery. We could grow any cells you want, stem cells coming over there. But can't we just grow some cartilage cells? So one of the things I tell people is that, you know, for cartilage cells is that cartilage cells, what we call chondrocytes, are very lazy and they're very picky. They're very lazy because they're very slow to divide, okay? So for you to have like a, what we call a skin graft, where I take your skin fibroblasts out of growing the lab, literally in about 3 to 4 days, you have a whole sheet of skin that's available, you know, for you to do skin grafting. Cartilage cells, literally you have to take weeks before you kind of grow these guys out. And they're very, very picky. Means that skin fibroblasts, you can put in a culture medium, they grow very, very, very quickly. They're not very picky in terms of, you know, temperature, in terms of what environment they have. Cartilage cells, you know, are very picky. You know, they need to have the right mechanical stimuli. They need to be pressurized. They need to grow in a certain, you know, a three-dimensional voxel before they kind of divide. So very, very picky and very, very lazy. But that's why it's kind of fun for us to deal with, you know, because, you know, these are little stubborn little guys that we kind of work with. So, you know, for the longest time, you can't grow cartilage cells, not until, you know, the 60s, the first time they can actually grow and isolate chondrocytes over there. In 1984, you know, Lars Peterson, which is a Swedish orthopedic surgeon, finally, you know, learned how to grow some cartilage from rabbits and implant it back in the rabbit defect and, you know, prove that it works. In 1987, that was the first time you actually, you know, take some cartilage, you know, from the person's body, grow it outside of the person's body, and put that cartilage back in the person's knee. So this is what we call ACI, or autologous cartilage transplantation. And since, you know, 1987, you know, about maybe 10,000 or a little bit more than like, you know, 15,000 of these surgeries have been done right now in terms of ACL surgery. It sounds great, right? You grow some cells, you put it back in, you know, the knee and expect the cartilage, you know, to grow. How do they do this operation? It's a two-stage operation. It means that in the first operation, you go in, is to biopsy the cells. So you have to, you know, do an operation, arthroscopic surgery first, take some cartilage, put it into, you know, tube and send it to, you know, a lab in Boston. Usually takes about 6 weeks for them to grow the cells. When they grow the cells, they actually send back a test tube with literally a test tube of cells. No cartilage, just cells in there. And what, you know, was initially proposed is that, hey, let me actually, you know, open up the knee. I'll actually take a little tissue from the, you know, bone called the periosteum, which is kind of like a bone covering. I'll sew this piece of tissue over the lesion. I will squirt these cells in there and sew it back up and cover that, you know, defect and expect these cells to grow and form cartilage, right? So chondrocytes are the cells. Cartilage is actually the you know, the substance that the cells make over there. So you want these chondrocytes to grow collagen out of this. So this was kind of what was proposed in the mid-90s, and people were very, very excited about it because, remember, for the longest time, we can't even grow these cells. Now we could grow them over there. But unfortunately, you know, over the past 15 years, when we look at these results, they are not very good. They're not very good means that you put the cells in there, you're all, you know, high-fiving, you know, people, you know, excited, jumping up and down, you know, like, you know, they leave the operating room, and then 6 months down the road, 1 year down the road, they say, well, gee, these guys don't do very well. You know, they're still hurt. And then when you get an MRI on them, you know, the tissue doesn't look very good. When you do surgery again to go back inside the knee, they look like those scar tissue that you have when you have a microfracture procedure. So what did we do wrong, right? This is literally a $25,000, operation, you know, versus a microfracture, which is about a $1,000 procedure. You know, why is it a big difference in terms of even spending that much, effort to it? You remember when we talked about chondrocytes earlier? What's unique about it? They're lazy and they're very picky, right? So lazy means that they take a long time to divide, so that's why they have to wait 6 weeks to get them to divide. They're very picky. So guess what they did wrong? They just squirt the knee back and, squirt the cells back into the knee and say, hey, okay, chondrocytes, go form cartilage right now. They're not going to work. They're very, very lazy and picky over there, right? So they squirt it back in, and these cells just float around and don't do anything, and, they're just wasted over there. But it took us about 10, 15 years to figure out, okay, wow, that was a problem. So maybe, we need to do a little bit better than that over there. I'm just kind of showing you, how this, transformed. But, it sounds very simple, but, a lot of people with tons of effort to kind of figure this out over here. Then we come to what we call a second-generation ACI. So, hey, the first one actually squirt in the knee, and the knee, expect the cells to grow. And sometimes the cells actually just leaks out from the lesion, doesn't stay. So second generation, let me actually put a scaffold, so almost like a little house, to allow the cells to live in, and then, soak them up in the scaffold and then put it inside the knee. So it's almost like containing those cells so that the cells doesn't float everywhere and making a stay in place. So that's what we call a second, generation ACI. It's actually done in Europe, and done in Europe over the past, I would say, 7 to 8 years right now. It's called MACI. It's called matrix-induced, autologous chondrocyte implantation. Again, you grow the cells, do a biopsy, grow the cells, and before you just squirt it back in the knee, you get this scaffold, almost like a sponge. You soak up the cells so the cells stay in that sponge, and then you kind of put it back in the person's knee. And hopefully that scaffold will give the right environment for the cells to, produce collagen over there. Okay? So this is actually, done, in Europe about 7 to 8 years right now. And the results are okay. It's actually a little bit better than what the microfracture, a little bit better than what the ACI. But when you look really closely at how the MRI findings, and also look at how they look like with arthroscopy, they're still not normal collagen. They don't form what we call hyaline collagen, or actually the one that actually has the nice columnar structures to it. So that's, kind of a picture of what MACI does. You clean up the lesion over there. What we do is actually, put a little scaffold, and seal the area. And this is actually the scaffold in place, and we glue that, piece, in the person over there. So people actually have, done some of this, operation over there. And it's clinical use over the past 7 to 8 years right now. It started, for as a experimental operation in 2002. But the results are okay. They are not, approved to be used in U.S. right now, but it has been used in Asia and Europe, over there. But what about, something else? What about just implanting collagen? So this is kind of where, we come into part of this over here. So third generation ACI is actually what we're doing a clinical trial right now, at UCSF. So what we do is that we can actually grow the cells, we actually process it, and we actually put it in a scaffold. But one of the things that unique that we do is that, besides just, putting a scaffold, just put it back in the knee, we'll put it in a scaffold, we actually put it in a tissue culturing, chamber, and we pressurize that, the scaffold. So almost fooling the cells as if it's actually inside a knee seeing pressure. And when the chondrocytes say, oh, wow, I have a nice room that I'm living in right now, which is a scaffold. Oh, wow, I have lights, I have electricity, I have the right pressure to go on. Well, I'm going to start making things over there right now. So literally, the cells are actually making extracellular matrix and making collagen outside the body. And then before we implant it back to the person, we check and see, hey, how much collagen this cell is actually made. If they don't make enough, we actually pressurize them, you know, more and keep them outside the body more before we put it in there. So literally when we put in the, you know, put the disc back in there, this is actually a piece of gelatinous structure. When you squeeze on it, it feels like, you know, in the gelatin. It doesn't feel like just cells in a, you know, fluid. It just actually feels like a piece of collagen when you put it back inside the person's knee. And when we actually put it in, we actually glue it in place to allow it to kind of heal. So this is kind of simple diagram, you know, what we do. So this is actually that neocart that actually, you know, after it finished growing, they actually give a little disc. So we go in and clean up the damaged collagen, you know, over there. Clean it all the way down to the bone area. We size that lesion. Put some glue on, you know, underneath, and we should put the, you know, lesion over it and cover that area. Okay, so that's what we call neocart over there. You know, I think that right now we're doing phase 3 clinical trial, which is not available for clinical use, you know, as of now. But we actually part of a multi-center group, you know, right now that, you know, look at this. But the usage is only for focal collagen, you know, lesion. So only you know, for the small lesion that we talked about earlier. If you have global arthritis, the whole knee is worn out over there, this is not ready for that use right now. So not ready for prime times. You're only ready for like selective lesions, you know, over there. The results are pretty encouraging, you know, for, you know, when we do clinical trials, you know, there are three different phases, phase 1, phase 2, phase 3. Phase 1, they actually look at safety. It means I put in someone's body and see whether the patient actually, you know, do well or actually have any bad, you know, side effects going to happen. Phase 2 is kind of, you know, a little comparative trial. You actually compare with something that's known. You know, in this case, we compare with microfracture, which is the common one that most of us use. And the phase 2 results are pretty encouraging. It means that we're actually better than what microfracture is. Phase 3 means that it's like, how is that, you know, a product being used when multiple people use it? So these are multi-center, lots of centers looking at it, lots of regular, you know, surgeons in the clinical trial, you know, participating also. So hopefully this will actually show it's going to be better than what we, you know, are able to do right now and improve patient care for others. Okay. So, you know, I know that I've been talking, you know, for the past, you know, hour, so I'm just going to pause, you know, over here for a couple minutes, take some questions, and we're going to move a little bit to a slightly different treatment, you know, for the, you know, second half of this. Okay, I'm going to take a few questions. Yes, yeah.
With the transplanted cartilage, is there a risk of rejection or
immune response? Great question. Maybe I'll catch my drink away. Great question. So when you do an allograft or transplant cartilage, do you have to worry about rejection? Okay, the answer is no. The answer is also yes. Okay, but why did I say that? Now, when you actually do a heart transplant, what do you need to do? You need to take lots of medication. Like you take prednisone, you take cyclosporin, you take the lots of the immunosuppression. The reason why is that when you actually put an organ in someone's body, the organ actually have a lot of what we call different cell, you know, surface markers. So you, when they put it in my body says, hey, that's not mine. That's someone else. Let me get rid of it. Okay. So anytime that, you know, when you have cell surface marker that actually foreign to yours, people get, you know, the body get excited about it. The good thing about, you know, collagen, one thing that we didn't go through very, you know, detail is that collagen is a very immuno, you know, privileged area. It means that there's no blood supply in collagen. And the other thing is the cells, as I mentioned, they're very lazy. They're very lazy, very picky. They all live in these little kind of lacunae with, you know, extracellular matrix where the collagen can surround the chondrocytes. So they actually, they don't generate a lot of what we call immune response at all, okay? So, you know, for these people that have these bulk allograft done, we don't even put them on immunosuppression. We don't have to put on any medication to suppress them at all because they actually don't recognize it's foreign and don't get, you know, excited. I also answer yes, means that if you really, really look at the purest form, saying that if I draw your blood to look at how excited your blood cells are in terms of responding to foreign, you know, material before this operation, and also, like, you know, do the same thing a year later, kind of blow some blood from you that people had these allograft, your body is mounting some type of response, but it's not a clinical significant response that the graft would break down, your knee would swell up, you know, over there. But your body, you know, even under the radar, is actually have some reaction. Hey, something is not mine, but I'm not getting too excited about it. It means that if you really need to get a transplant of a heart or lung down the road, you may be a little bit more selective because your body is already in tune. Oh wow, I'm getting excited, you know, with different, you know, type of body, a different type of body parts in my, you know, in my system over there. But we don't have to take any immunosuppression drugs for that. Question? Yeah.
Do you
When it comes to genetics and how that plays a role with joints and strength of cartilage, how much of a spectrum is there from people that may have some sort of their cartilage is kind of more apt to degenerate versus somebody who can run marathons until they're 100 years old?
Question is that, you know, are there genetic reason why some people with cartilage last longer, you know, last less, you know, what's the spectrum, what's the variation over there? And the answer is that they are. You know, they are, you know, big differences between some people that are actually born to be more active and the cartilage could withstand it. Or some people, you know, when you look at it, wow, they're like 30, 40 years, they already, the cartilage started to break down over there. So there's some genetic, you know, predisposition. There are some genetic diseases that make the cartilage, you know, break down very quickly. I use inflammatory arthritis as an example. Sometimes, for example, people with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, so people have bad arthritis because they actually have an underlying inflammatory condition. It's genetic, okay? And then we break down the joint very, very early at a young age over there. Genetic difference could be between ethnicity. So we actually know that for whatever reason, Asian tends to have less, you know, hip arthritis compared with, you know, people in Northern European descent over there. It's kind of a big epidemiology study that can show that. Is it related to diet? Is it related to genetic? Is it related to, you know, behavior? You know, all parts of it. But there's some genetic, you know, composition. It is a big spectrum. But right now, there's no great way to check where you are except for the known diseases. The known diseases mean that, you know, do you have inflammatory arthritis? Do you have ankylosing spondylitis? You know, all these big, you know, inflammatory conditions, we could check very, very well. But within purely osteoarthritis, there's no great markers yet to pick at it. And the way I tell people, too, is that, well, there are markers out there. It's just that there's so much implication when we actually tell people, like, you know, what those are when we start testing. You know, what does it really mean? You know, unless we actually have a solution to change what the natural history, you know, natural, you know, degeneration, I think it would be not very helpful. We'll just tell people, oh, by the way, you got to have your joint, you know, way out, you know, pretty quickly, and there's nothing we could, you know, help you with. But there is a big spectrum. Okay. Question, yeah.
What you've described tonight sounds really innovative to me. So my question is, as a regular patient, in your department here at UCSF, do they get exposed to all of these potential treatments, or is it just for a select few?
Yeah, so the question is that, you know, as a patient here at UCSF, are you available for all these treatments, you know, over here? The answer is yes. But you have to, you know, depends what your condition is. Remember we talked about earlier, too, is that these conditions they all work for a particular group of patients. The ones that we mentioned so far are mostly for the more selective, smaller cartilage lesions, you know, so they actually, you know, work. Once you have more generalized where, you know, the patient don't qualify for that. Or, you know, I didn't, you know, fail to mention, there's a lot of patient factor, too. If you are a smoker that smokes a lot, well, some of these operation won't work very well, okay? Or you have other, you know, medical conditions over there, it may not work. In terms of the clinical trials, they're actually very selective, you know, inclusion criteria, so a little bit more particular. But most of these techniques that I mentioned so far, except for the last, you know, one or two, it's available right now for clinical use. So even like people outside UCSF, you know, people, you know, around the neighborhood can do this operation. I don't want you to think that this is only what we could do at UCSF. The last one, the last two, probably, you know, we are more selective, you know, over here. But most of what I talked about so far is what's available in the community. Maybe one more question. I'm going to move on, you know, for the second part. Yes, yeah.
Just assuming, you correct assume that your cartilage, like the rest of your body, when it's young, it's got a pretty good ability to heal. And as you get older, that just sort of deteriorates, just like your skin. It's sort of the same kind of.
Yeah, yes and no. And I think that when you are 18 and younger, when you're, you know, still growing, you do have the ability to heal cartilage. The best time to heal the cartilage actually when actually when you're in utero. So when you're in your mother's womb, they actually have done a study here at UCSF, is that they actually, you know, open up, you know, the fetus, actually create an injury and actually let the, you know, baby live on. That cartilage is completely healed, no issue at all, okay? The younger you are, the more likely you could heal cervical cord injury. The older you are, the less likely. But the minute you finish, skeletal maturity, which is usually 15 for boys and 14 for girls, your ability is actually about the same. So we don't really drop down our ability because the cord in general don't heal. Okay? Once you finish your growing, when you injure cartilage, will not need to heal. It always is there with the injury over there, and it doesn't kind of smoothen the area out. So I think our ability to heal really is within our first 14, 15 years of life, and after that, the injuries just accumulate over there. Okay. So that's one thing that's different, from the other parts of the body. Okay. So I'm going to go on for a little bit part of here, and we're going to take some questions at the end also. Okay. So we talk a little bit about the palliative, some reparative, treatment, some of the newer, technique, restorative, type, treatment. Well, what else could we do? We talk about realigning the leg in terms of, realigning the limb over there, try to offload, the joint. So I'm going to focus on the knee a bit over here. So this is actually a picture I kind of show with some of my patient over there. So a normal alignment, for a person when they stand up means that the axis, for weight bearing goes, from the hip to the ankle, it goes right through the middle of the knee. So that's actually when you stand up, your knee is nice and straight over there. Some of us, when we stand up, I'm not going to name who it is, over here. When we stand up over here, we're going to be a little bit more bow-legged. Okay, so guys tend to be a little bit more bow-legged as we get older, kind of like almost like cowboys over there. When you're actually bow-legged, what happens to the knee is actually the inside part of the knee gets more wear and tear. Okay. Ladies especially, you tend to have, a longer leg, a little wider pelvis compared with men. And most of, you tend to have a knock knee, okay? Knock knee, you tend to wear out the outside part of the leg, over there. Okay? So it depends on your limb alignment over there. Your knee joint will wear out at different parts. Most of us wear out the inside part of the knee because of alignment over there. There's a particular person that actually have a lot of what we call a varus knee. The knee really, really curved in over there. You can imagine the inside part of the knee takes a lot of forces over there and not do very well. Okay, so when you actually have selective parts of the knee get worn out, you can do surgery to offload the knee, to take the edge off in that side. Okay, so normally when you draw a line to go from the hip down to the ankle, that line should pass through about 2/3 of the width of the tibia plateau, the width of the tibia. If you're off that line over there, then you actually put more stress either for the inner or the outer part, depends on how your limb lines up over there. Okay, so this is kind of what we normally do in clinic. We actually get a patient to stand in front of the X-ray. You get a what we call long line alignment film for this person over here. This particular person will actually have a history of outside meniscus surgery, lateral meniscus surgery. The outside part of the knee is getting a little bit worn out over there. When he stands up over here, he tends to have a little bit a knock knee. So you can see that how the knee kind of curves in a bit over there. So what we suggest is actually doing surgery on this particular patient. So what I do is that I could do what we call an osteotomy. I literally cut the bone, realign the bone so that now I can balance the wear out a bit. So remember, the outside part of the knee is worn out. I make a cut on the outside part of the leg, opens it up. So essentially you make someone very knock knee to make it a little bit straighter. So now you actually shift away from the outside to the inside part of the leg. So this is actually a realignment procedure, and it works for people. So the analogy is almost like when you drive a car and the driver's side of the wheels, the tires get worn out a bit because you sit on that side a lot. Well, let me kind of jack up the car on the driver's side and offload it and shift the weight to the passenger side so that you let those tires wear out. But you're not taking away the arthritis, you're just offloading it. You're shifting one side of the weight to the other side. But you still have arthritis in knee. So these people still have some symptoms in terms of arthritis. They may be more tolerable. These are people maybe early enough that they're not severe enough that need a replacement. And we want to kind of buy them some time, before they get replacement. And then a scenario that I have is actually, this is a gentleman over here, 24-year-old, had a history of ACL surgery, and he had a surgery to remove the meniscus. So this is medial meniscus surgery. They remove the meniscus on the inside. So remember the meniscus, the shock absorbers on the knee. So when you lose your shock absorbers, what happens is that side of the knee get worn out a bit more as you go with time. So this particular person continued to be very, very active. His knee is quite stable, but he started to hurt on the inside part of the leg. So this is actually x-ray of him, you know, when you kind of look at it, the inside part, he actually looked pretty good still. There's no joint space narrowing, you know, there's no big spurs inside it, you know, inside the inside part of the leg on x-ray over there. These are screws that we actually use to do ACL surgeries on over here. But when we actually look inside with arthroscopy, the inside part needs to start to break down. So this is that person actually have some early cartilage breakdown over there. We could do resurfacing if it's very focal lesion. We could actually do transplants of the meniscus right now if, you know, the knee is not so worn out, you know, over there. Okay. So remember, like, you know, there are causes of arthritis could be traumatic. So this person is traumatic, you know, the loss of the meniscus. We can do surgery to actually, you know, give them a new meniscus, you know, right now. Or we could do some realignment procedure. So this particular person over here, you see the inside part of the knee is really, really worn out over here. This is exposed bone over there. Outside part of the knee, really good, nice and smooth. So this would be a little bit early to get a knee replacement, right? 24-year-old. And then the other thing, when you do replacement, you know, what happens to the good side? You don't want to waste that. That's probably going to be good for another, like, probably 50, 60 years over there. So in this particular person, if we could kind of save this knee to try to buy, you know, him or her some time, I think that'd be, you know, very, very helpful. So this particular person, what we did, I did that microfracture, which is the kind of, you know, more a first-line treatment for articular cartilage injury. Put a little pocos inside the leg. They kind of offload that, you know, cartilage. At the same time, I actually did a realignment operation. I shift away from the inside part of the leg to the outside to kind of offload the inside part, you know, allow that microfracture to heal better. And also, you know, allow, you know, him to kind of balance the knee a bit so that, you know, it won't wear out just the inside part of the leg for them. But still, the arthritis is there, you know. But, you know, at least we kind of, you know, try to do some restorative treatment for this patient over here. So these are some of the operations, you know, that we, you know, do after surgery. See the little plate over there. So this person's, you know, comes a little bit, you know, curved in, a little bit bow-legged in the inside part. You get a little bit worn out. And we actually make a little cut in the bone and literally realign the leg. We open the inside part of the leg more, shift it, you know, away from the inside to the outside. So we swing the axis from going through the inside part of the leg to now going through the outside part of the leg. So the outside takes up more load. So you're kind of, you know, balancing, you know, the knee right now. Because if this continue to go on, the inside knee is going to wear all the way down the bone, and this patient would need some type of replacement surgery at a young age over there. So this is kind of what we could do over there. What about replacement? How many of you guys have had a replacement or know replacement neurosurgery over here? So replacement actually fairly common. You know, I think now knee replacements are up to about maybe 500,000, 600,000 done per year right now in the U.S. and a hip replacement about 400,000. I do primarily, you know, I don't do knee replacement, hip replacement. I do shoulder replacement. And in the country right now, we do about almost like 60,000, 70,000 shoulder replacement right now. So this is a fairly commonly done, you know, operation. One of the things I tell, you know, people about replacement is that replacement really kind of revolutionized how we take care of patients. You know, in the old days when we don't have replacement, when people have bad arthritis, we say, well, you know, that's tough. You know, nothing to do. You know, you have to use a cane. You can't walk so much. People really, really debilitated. In replacement now, you know, I think that really allow people to kind of, you know, resume their activities. It's not perfect. Means that they don't last, you know, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you know, like your normal joint should last over there. But at least they last, you know, most of them last up to 10 and not 15 years, you know. And I think that's actually better than a lot of operation we do, you know. I joke with people all the time, too, is, you know, my car doesn't even last 15 years sometimes, you know. I think, you know, replacement actually lasts 15 years, some of them. But depends, you know, I think it depends on when you get it done and what age or what activity. So there are different types of replacement. I'm going to focus mostly on the knee, you know, right now. So you can have unicompartmental knee replacement or selective, you know, a partial, you know, a joint replacement. You can have a partial joint replacement in the elbow. You can have a partial joint replacement in the shoulder. You can have a partial hip done, means that just one side of the hip joint get worn, you know, replaced. And the knee is actually more commonly known as a unicompartmental knee replacement. You can just replace one part of the, you know, the joint. It's actually, you know, good in a sense to maintain the range of motion. Some of you guys may know people that have knee replacement done. When they have the knee replacement done, they work, they, you know, they're actually able to be active, but they don't have all the range of motion back. The knee gets a bit stiff. The joints are just a little bit stiffer than normal. So when you do these partial knee replacements, you preserve most of the integrity of the joint and just replace certain parts of it. You can maintain a lot of the range of motion. It means that, you know, if you have good range of motion before surgery, you have good range of motion after surgery. So partial knee replacement or unicompartmental knee replacement work really well. It's best for older patients and older, you know, in this particular, you know, series, about 70 and above over there. Usually for more sedentary lifestyle, you know, people do quite well with unicompartmental knee replacement. It does have higher failure rate if you have a high body mass index. So for people that actually, you know, heavier, you know, set, you know, a heavier weight, they do tend to fail a bit earlier for the unicompartmental knee replacement over there. It's a good operation. The results, you know, right now that most published series are up to 90% successful at 10 years. You know, as I mentioned, it's, you know, longer than how long my car's probably going to last, you know, over here. But these are usually for particular, you know, compartments. Either medial compartment, which is inside part of the leg, outside part of, you know, of the leg, you know, or lateral compartment, or, you know, sometimes people could do patellofemoral replacement, just replace a kneecap. But replacing a kneecap, you know, those type of operations, they don't, that particular one doesn't work as well. Yeah. So, you know, medial and lateral unicompartmental knee replacement actually does have, you know, good track record. But how about, like, you know, major joint replacement, total knee or total hip replacements over there? This has been done for over the past 40 years right now. So, you know, I tell people that we learn from a lot of mistakes. You know, we actually try to make some improvements over the years or so. It is still by far one of the most successful operations we do in orthopedics. And I don't even do hip and knee replacements over there. The success rate right now, you know, for most hip and knee, you know, is about 90 to 95% successful 10 years. Doesn't mean that 5 to 10% of them have to have it replaced again. Just means that they don't like their knee and hips, you know, or joints, you know, after 10, 15 years over there. But still could be quite effective. One of the things that we still fight is it does, you know, limit your range of motion. Whatever we put in is still not as good as, you know, what you're born with or what God gave you over there. So you're still a little bit stiffer in terms of range of motion. It doesn't move the same way. You know, most people that have had replacement would say, hey, it moves, you know, you get, it walks, it doesn't hurt as much. But yeah, it just doesn't feel normal. Yeah, it doesn't feel normal because the knee feels a bit, you know, bigger. You know, it does a little more clunkier, and a little bit, you know, make noises on you that doesn't feel like a joint over there, and it kind of a little bit sloppy. You know, the knee joint a little bit sloppy than normal, and the hip joint just, you know, doesn't give you the flexibility as, you know, a normal joint does. You know, estimated in more than 4 million people, you know, right now in the U.S., you know, half, you know, knee replacement not done. You know, we actually have a growing population right now with age, you know, people age 50 and younger that need a replacement. There's a big increase right now in terms of number of replacements done because, you know, I think our population is getting older. And I think in general, people, you know, tend to be more aggressive to do these type of surgery also because the operation works very well. On the other hand, if you, the younger the patient have this operation done, the quicker the, you know, replacement is going to wear out. It's kind of basic laws of, you know, physics. I tell people, you know, that the more active you are, the quicker the plastic is going to wear out. Most of these, you know, articulation are still metal and plastic, so it's a metal, you know, parts articulating on the plastic piece. And some of you guys may have heard about these metal hip replacement that was done about, you know, 5 to 7 years ago. They don't work very well. I think that was a mistake, you know, that, you know, people have made. And I think that, you know, people are actually learning that, you know, the metal and plastic articulation is probably still the best one out there. People constantly try to improve on what we have right now. But I tell people all the time, so every new design or every new implant or every new bearing surface doesn't mean it has to be better. Okay, you know, I think, you know, I use Toyota Prius all the time. You know, Prius number one worked very good. The second Prius worked very, you know, really, really good. The third generation, big failure, you know, big recalls, lots of issues over there. So, you know, newer design doesn't mean it's better. You know, whatever we have right now works really, really well. Can we get it better even down the road? I think the answer is yes, but, you know, cautious with that. Okay, there are complications with any type of replacement that we do. These are some of them, you know, over there. Infections are, you know, one of the big ones that we're worried about. So this particular person over here has an infection, you know, in the front part of the leg, lead direct to the prosthesis. Infection can happen, you know, in primarily two ways. It can infection when the prosthesis is being put in. It means that you have the operation done, prostheses being put in. Remember, these are big metal pieces over there. And when you put inside the body say, hey, that's not mine. You know, that's someone else's. You know, most of the time the body say, oh, it's a big metal clunking piece. I'm just going to leave it alone over there. Don't bother to deal with it at all. But if the metal component have any type of debris or any type of bacteria that can sit on the surface, the body say, oh my God, this is no good. I'm going to get rid of it. Why do they get onto the surface? Because of the air we live in. Okay, because air have a lot of bacteria. Your skin have a lot of bacteria. They could get in there very, very quickly. And also, our body have a lot of bacteria inside the body also. So, a lot of times that, you may be a little immunocompromised, and the bacteria will go to the, prostate to settle down there. So most of the infection, can be divided grossly two types. One is early, during the perioperative period, and usually within the first month after surgery, because you still have an incision, at risk of developing infection. Or you have late infection. Every time you brush your teeth, bacteria goes into your bloodstream. So if you're actually weaker in terms of your general health, that particular bacteria may actually settle down the prosthesis and make it infected. So you can have late, a complication of infection also. And that's one of the things that I think, we as a field is kind of struggling to manage that, because we can't really keep people's health at tip-top shape, for the rest of their life. But there are newer design that potentially could, counter that, we may be able to kind of coat these implants with antibiotics right now, and hopefully that would actually, negate some of the late infection. But remember, every new technology may have some trade-off. They may not work perfectly, so I'm cautious about it with anything new that we change, but hopefully the data will actually, lead us to, better things. They could loosen, means that, just like a any bearing surfaces, the more you use it, whether it could wear out over there. So you wear out the polyethylene, you may dislocate, or you wear out the metal, they actually may, the joint may loosen up on you. So that's why if you have a replacement, you need to periodically go in and check with your physician and do the surgery. That's why I know I tell the patient all the time to when I do a shoulder replacement with them, you're stuck with me for the rest of your life, because every time, once a year, every couple of years, come back and see me. I need to get an x-ray to see how you're doing. The reason why is we need to check them periodically to make sure the joint hasn't worn out, because if you catch them early, you could do a much smaller operation, just changing the bearing surface, just changing the plastic, instead of taking the whole thing out. Most of the time, they wait for a long time to come in, oh my, the whole knee is worn out, then everything needs to be redone, which is not as good. So make sure that if you have a replacement done, or know that people have replacement done, make sure they actually have follow-up, which is extremely important. Why do we not want to do replacement when every person that comes in with cartilage injury? Because they don't work as well long term. And if they wear out and if we have to do it again, they don't do as well. So when you look at revision surgery, then the results are not as good as your primary. So your infection rate goes up, your revision rate goes up over there. So the numbers I give you guys, maybe 90-95% successful 10-15 years. Revision, 75-80, it depends on what the reason that you failed for the first time. So results are not as good over there. There are a lot of new technology coming up. I'm going to spend the last 10 minutes talk a little bit about something new that we're doing, and some of the things that may kind of get you kind of raise your eyebrows a little bit about some of the innovative things that are coming up over there. So I'm going to talk a little bit about new methods of detecting cartilage injury. Some of the things that we can detect, injury before the x-rays or MRI could do, even prior to like x-ray changes over there. So one of the things that we're doing, actively right now is what we call T1 row imaging. It's actually a particular type of MR imaging. You remember MRI we talked about before, is that we can actually look at the, injuries, and look at the cartilage and say, oh yeah, it's torn, not torn, it's worn out, it's not worn out. I can't tell you the quality of the, tissue. It means that, hey, how stiff is the cartilage? Is it really working pretty good? Is it getting softer already? Or is it getting, or is it actually still pretty quality? We can't look at quality right now, but now we actually have something called T1 row imaging that allows us to do it. So this is actually a particular study we did. This is actually a bunch of, this is actually a volunteer over here with normal cartilage. This is actually the kneecap. This is where the kneecap sits on. They're called the trochlea, and this is the inside outside part of the knee. So we actually could measure, what the quality of tissue inside, the body, to see how much proteoglycan, which is kind of how much tissue or cartilage, inside the person over there. And we actually grade them, kind of put it in a color scale, makes it easier for people to visualize. So anything red is considered, soft cartilage. Anything yellow and blue is considered pretty normal cartilage. So this is actually a healthy volunteer with no, you know, knee pain. This is a particular person, actually, you see a lot of red in there. So this is actually a patient, what would kind of, you know, cause that. It's an osteoarthritic patient over there. So a lot of, you know, kind of redness over there. So this patient clearly, on these T and Rho scans, show that there's some, you know, abnormal cartilage in there. But when you look very closely to these people, the amount of cartilage, the amount of thickness of the tissue is about the same. So this is a particular person over here, when you get a plain X-ray on, they look perfectly normal. When you get a regular MRI on them, they look perfectly normal. But now I can actually pick up the changes before regular MRI or before X-ray changes. Turns out this is a particular patient, you know, is a patient of mine. He actually does a lot of marathon, we mentioned about earlier. Every time he runs, he actually has what we call, you know, anti-knee pain. The knee hurts in the front part of the knee. And now we can actually pick up these changes. And he actually been seeing multiple people. Hey, you know, all your MRIs and X-ray looks abnormal. Now we can actually see the injuries over them. Okay. This is actually a young person, you know, 38-year-old, you know, had acute, you know, ligament tear, ACL that's torn. This is the outside part of the knee we're scanning through. Now, this is actually the area where the impact on the cartilage. See the red signal right there? This person has a normal, you know, X-ray, normal regular MRI, but now we can pick up the changes. And this is a particular person when I did an arthroscopic surgery on. I can actually probe that lesion, and that's the one I actually could see. Oops, sorry about that. So this is the one actually we could, you know, see that cartilage injury right where that red signal is. So, you know, we talked about earlier is that if we could see it, maybe we could treat it. If we can't see it, we can't treat it. So a long time ago, we can't see these lesions. We don't know what, you know, we do with this. We don't really know what the right treatments are. So now hopefully we could see the lesions earlier, and hopefully we could actually treat this better. Okay. Now, other new treatments, I think some of you guys maybe longly asked me this question over here. How about stem cells, right? UCS have this big stem cell institute, a big building along the hill, you know, behind this building over here. Well, what about stem cell injection? People go to France. Kobe Bryant got it done, and he's playing really, really well. Oh, I'm sorry, he hasn't played yet this year. He's still like in the injury reserve over there. But how about stem cell injection? There's no science behind it. There's absolutely no science. So stem cell research, a lot of it is actually done here. So this campus is very, very active stem cell research. You know, are we doing any stem cell injection for knee arthritis? Absolutely not, okay, because it's not really ready for clinical use right now. People use that word stem cell all the time. Stem cell just means, stem cell, there's a very defined, the very, you know, a particular definition, especially on this campus, you know, it means that cells that could go into any type of, you know, cell type over there. But a quote unquote stem cell that other people look at, basically look at cells that are not so well differentiated. That means, you know, stem cell actually cell that actually could go to any type of, you know, cell type. But now the other people actually use, you know, more differentiated cell and call it stem cell or bone marrow cells. Bone marrow cells, not all of them are stem cells. Only particular ones in the bone marrow are called stem cells. So there's absolutely no science on stem cell injection in the knee, okay? Most of, you know, the people that, you know, we've seen that come back and, get treatment somewhere else, it hasn't worked, you know, over there. There's Kobe Bryant that said it works, but we have to see whether he still plays this year over here. And how about platelet-rich plasma, like PRP? Have you guys heard of PRP? Some of you guys over there. So PRP is basically, hey, I'll take some blood, you know, from your body, I spin it down, I get the really, really rich air with growth factor, and I inject it back to the joint, back to your patella tendon, back to your joint, back to your Achilles tendon, and hope that it's going to heal. It's from your body, right? It must be good. That's why I can inject it in there. It's from your body. It won't do anything bad to you, right? So it should be okay. Well, you know what? Why did it, you know, get so much attention? Because of Heinz Ward. So, you know, I was trained in Pittsburgh, you know, which would take care of the Pittsburgh Steelers over there. Heinz Ward actually won the Super Bowl with the Steelers that year. And the game before the Super Bowl, he sprained his MCL, which is a medial collateral ligament. And one of the companies, you know, is very big on using the PRP, and they actually did the PRP injection right before Super Bowl, and actually was announced, you know, during the Super Bowl, Heinz Ward is playing because of PRP. And they actually won the Super Bowl. And then the Wall Street Journal the next day, you know, had a front, you know, full page, say, again, medical journal, is that PRP injection let Heinz Ward win the Super Bowl. Wow, you know, everybody was jumping up and down over there. Everybody's getting PRP. So, you know, as a more, you know, nerdy guy, so I really look at statistics. So I'm actually pull out the statistics of that Super Bowl and say, well, let me look at Hines Ward and look at all the wide receivers that did play that game. Well, he really didn't play that well compared with the other guy. He didn't have any touchdown passes. He caught like 2 passes. The other guy on the team caught like 8 passes over there, and he didn't get PRP. So, you know, so my, you know, my argument against PRP always is that, well, it didn't really work that well. So there was a lot of excitement after the Super Bowl, you know, from a few years back. There were a lot of media marketing. A lot of people actually got PRP injection. There's absolutely no good data that it works. There's a lot of good data that says that it doesn't work. So a lot of good data said if you do the PRP injection and do what we call sham injection, which is inject you with some saline, salt water, or sugar water, no difference at all. Okay, you know, there's one particular entity that PRP seems to be able to have some effect. So I use all these, you know, terms of seems, maybe, you know, effect over there is, you know, for your elbow lateral, you know, elbow tendonitis over there. But it's very, very, very small series over there. But all the other treatments for joint pain, tendon injuries, patellar tendonitis, absolutely no data. I said it works. But it's actually a big, you know, market, you know, that a lot of people are doing it right now and charging lots of people, you know, to do it. So I'll be cautious, you know, when people tell you about it. How about vitamin supplements and massages, you know, over there? You know, they seem to work, okay? Vitamins and supplements, I tell people, they are okay. You know, there's no big serious effect that they really make a difference, you know. People ask me about glucosamine, chondroitin sulfate all the time. People ask me about the joint juice or joint, you know, shake or, you know, or shock, you know, shock fins collagen, you know, over there. I tell people is that they're vitamins, you know, kind of like people tell you about taking vitamin C that can prevent you from getting a cold. I've been taking vitamin C for the past 20 years. I still get a cold every year. So if it works for you, great. If it doesn't, don't spend too much money on it. I tell people all the time with my patients, when you go to Costco, when you get the glucosamine, chondroitin sulfate in your pills, don't read the labels. Get the biggest jar, get the cheapest one over there. Okay? Because whatever they actually put on label, not true. There's no data on that. Okay, so more bells and whistles are put on there, absolutely not true. Okay, you could take them, it's okay. If it makes you feel better, great over there. Most of us, when you have a balanced diet, it doesn't make a big difference at all. Whatever you take in, you know, in your mouth, it gets digested, you know, in your GI tract. And by the time it gets absorbed, they're not, you know, part of collagen anymore. So that's not going to help you. Massages can help, you know, but certainly recommend to do it as much as possible, you know, with them, okay? So, you know, we'll talk a little bit about realignment procedure. I'm going to share with you what one of the new things that we're doing right now, yeah, is that a realignment procedure, but a little different from what we, you know, did before. So this is actually one of the, you know, patient I actually showed you earlier, that the inside part of the knee is getting worn out. So we actually put a little plate in there and kind of, you know, wedge the knee open and shift away from the inside to the outside part of the knee. So that's what we call osteotomy or realignment procedure. So what it does is redistribute the load. It actually changes the load from the inside to the outside part of the leg. So when you sit here, wait a minute here, Ben. I mean, you know, you're changing your weight from inside to the outside. What happened to the outside part of the knee? Isn't the outside part of the knee worn out right now? Well, yeah, it is. But, you know, that's the better part of the knee. But we'll let it wear out more. And when it wear out more, then we'll worry about it later on. But are there ways that we could really offload the knee instead of just shifting the weight around? So these are actually diagrams show that, you know, when you actually make a cut in the leg and shift the weight around, how much weight are you really shifting from one side to the other side? So you can actually increase the pressure on the outside part of the knee up to 30% to 40% when you actually do this realignment procedure. Well, are there any ways we could load share this over here? It means that can I actually do a procedure to kind of offload the joint instead of shifting the weight around? So this is kind of, you know, really, really, you know, new. This is kind of, I want to share with you some of the things that, you know, people are doing here on this campus, also at UCSF. So this is actually a load sharing device called, you know, a kidney spring device. Basically, it essentially is like putting a spring underneath the skin. So when a knee strained out, it actually could, you know, the spring absorbs, you know, the force, and it transfer the load from the, you know, shin bone to the thigh bone and offload the inside part of the knee. So it's pretty innovative, but you can also see how big this device is right now. So this is very, very early and conceptual. There is a clinical trial that's undergoing on right now here at UCSF. We're part of, you know, over there. This device is available in Europe. You know, there's about 600 of these being put in, you know, across the world right now. And the results are favorable, means that they are okay, they're not great. So the, you know, the idea is that, you know, when the knee strains out, you know, spring offloads, you know, the knee. So instead of shifting the weight from the inside to the outside, you're actually absorbing the, you know, stress through that spring over there. My initial, you know, reaction is, oh my, you know, that screw was going to break. So we actually, you know, we were part of some of these mechanical testing to look at the spring's actually pretty durable. It can actually, you know, last, you know, millions of cycles of loading over there. The other thing that, you know, I'm concerned about is actually they're pretty bulky. So these are actually some of the patients that actually have the spring put in. So this is actually, you know, some of the patients here, this is the side that actually had the spring put in. That's the side that the spring put in. So it's not as bulky as, you know, people think it could be. But, you know, this is certainly one of the things that, you know, could potentially be part of our treatment algorithm, you know, down the road. It's what we call an IDE trial right now, which is an experimental device that's being trialed, you know, in the U.S. There's only about maybe 35 of these being put in the U.S. right now, but this is something that may be coming in the next few years, and hopefully to kind of give you a little alternative before, like, a major joint replacement. So in terms of, you know, treatment of articular cartilage injuries, I think that, you know, the field has made a lot of progress in terms of resurfacing, you know, mostly in the restorative type, you know, treatment. We talk about the cell-based type treatment and growing cells, kind of putting it back in the body. I think some of the newer devices like the NeoCart probably is the best available treatment out there right now. There's a lot of improvement in terms of, you know, improving the longevity of replacements, both hip, you know, a knee, a shoulder, and elbow replacement over there. The most important thing is that we, you know, we try to do different treatment to meet the patient's need and symptoms over there. So I'm going to end over here. I'm going to take a few questions, you know, from the audience over here, and I'm also going to stick around and answer some questions. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, so the question is that, you know, was that osteotomy done on a young patient? How active that person is, how they're able to adapt to it? Yes, it's actually one of my patients. We did on, you know, on him when he's 24. That was almost about 5 years ago right now. In terms of how adaptive the operation is, you know, for him, before surgery, he can't run. He can't play soccer. And after we actually, you know, do the operation, he's actually able to play, you know, kind of club soccer, you know, there right now, you know, kind of weekend, you know, soccer. He does play in the league. But I tell people is that don't use individual success or individual outcomes to look at a treatment because everybody's a little bit different. And I tell people all the time, too, my goal is not to let you go back to playing soccer and being very, very aggressive. My goal is that you try to push back replacement as far back as possible. It's a very good treatment, but it's not very good for you at this point in your life. You know, he's 24 years old, and he started to break down inside the knee. You see that exposed bone over there. So, I know that if I don't do anything for him, I think he's going to run into trouble. But he's still pretty active right now. He definitely scaled down compared with, you know, when he was in college. He was really, really aggressive on that. But those are the things we need people to realize, you know, over there. All right, so I'm going to stick around. Well, thanks for, you know, being part of this interview. Really appreciate you guys coming tonight. So thank you. Yeah.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.